The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
Learner's Permit, Thursdays on my YouTube. Subscribe today.
Baltimore, I can't thank you all enough for the sold-out shows at the Famous. John at Jimmy's Famous Seafood, thank you as well. Y'all make it feel so good when I come home. Thank you for the great times, the laughs, and the great food. Brea, this Thursday at the Brea Improv. Get your tickets if you haven't already. We're going to have some fun out there in Brea. Arlington, Virginia, November 12th and 13th. And I'll be in Cleveland December 9th through the 11th. Get your tickets at RyanSickler.com.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Night Pan Studios. I'm Ryan Sickler, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all social media. It has been so fun to get out on tour and get back to live shows and seeing you guys. Get your tickets to the Night Pants Nation tour at RyanSickler.com. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube, and the Patreon show continues to grow. I mean, we're solving cold cases over here. We got a lot of shit going on. Nobody's solving cold cases on comedy podcasts right now. I'm pretty sure of that. Maybe they are. I don't know. I don't watch other shit. I'm too busy. But anyway, if you or someone you know has that story that has to be heard, please submit it to honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. We'll vet the stories. Hopefully you get to do an episode together. It's $5 a month. You get the Honeydew a day early ad free at no additional charge. And if you're in for a year, sign up for it and you'll get over a month free episodes. All right. You do not need to be a Patreon member to tell your story. People ask that a lot. You don't have to. This show, you know what this show is here, y'all. We're highlighting the lowlights. I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. And today's storyteller, I'd love to say it's great to have her back here, because it is. But for you all, it's her first time here on the Do. But for me, unfortunately, and fortunately, oh, shit, we got Fortune Feepster back on the Honeydew.
Missed me. That's what it was.
I did miss you. And all right, first of all, before I explain what happened, please promote everything you'd like to promote. Get your tour out there, all that, please.
Well, yeah, I'm on tour all over the U.S. It's fortunefeepster.com. I mean, I'm literally hitting like every city.
And killing it.
It's been amazing. The turnouts have been just blowing my mind. This is my first theater tour after my Netflix special came out, Sweet and Salty. Mm-hmm. It changed the game for me. So this has been incredible. We're going to be adding shows like an LA show and Minneapolis, Canada shows later on in the tour. We just haven't done that yet, but there's so many
places.
Don't
you love that when people are like, you're not coming to Michigan? I'm like, well, we're not. We haven't booked it. We're coming. We just don't have it yet.
It's the people from Florida who are very mad at me every time I post. I mean, because we put out this, I was supposed to go on tour of, you know, March 2020 was my first show.
And me too.
None of it happened. So this is all rescheduled. So for a year and a half, every time I've, you know, reminded about the tour, Florida's like, why do you hate us?
Yeah.
Why are you coming to Florida? I'm like, I'm coming. It's just not booked yet. Like, it's you route different parts of your tour at different times. So Florida, Simmer down.
She'll get there.
I'll get there.
She'll get there. FLA.
We'll wrestle Gators. It'll be great.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm going. I still have Chicago, all these other cities to book yet. It's just not done. Denver, all of them. But yeah, I'm going to be out there for a better part of a year, probably a year, same. Every other week.
Yeah, my shows in like Denver and Seattle and Portland, Grand Rapids, they're all in March. People will have held on to those tickets for 2 years. Yeah. It's like,
how great is that?
That is.
People are the best.
They're the best. It's such a testament to what good people they are. Because, you know, we obviously had no control over a pandemic. We wanted to do the shows, but, you know, you couldn't. Everything shut down. Yeah. So we routed that in March, and they're still showing up and holding on to their tickets. It's so cool.
Anything else? What else you want to promote?
I do a SiriusXM radio show with Tom Papa. It's
I got to get Tom Papa on the
Honeydew. Oh, yeah. You'd love Tom.
He's, I want to get him on.
He's a good guy. We do it for Netflix on the SiriusXM channel 93. That's every morning and repeats in the afternoon if people want to tune into something else. There's you know what I mean? It's like everyone's listening to they're like, we have our thing. We're good. But that's just if you're looking for some extra comedy content.
Well, I want to apologize publicly to you here. I know I was. All right. So let me explain what's going on here. Fortune came. You came.
A couple months ago.
You and Prof, the rapper Prof, and his crew came. You were after them.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, my old producer blew the video away.
Yeah.
And I made a public apology on the video. And you guys are the shit because everybody else is like, Sickler, it's not a big deal. Yeah. It's not a big deal. And it's not. But here it is. Look. I don't operate that way. It's a big deal. Those people and you, your time's valuable. They flew here for the episode, and I don't care that you're local. You came here, you gave me your time, and we fucked it up. And for that, I am extremely sorry. That's, listen, in over 10 years of not just podcasting, it's never happened.
Yeah.
It's never fucking happened. It happens to two. So I know Potter's mentioned it, but my old producer's gone, and we have Kirsten now, who's...
Yeah. Killing it.
Killing it over there. Well, like, my whole team is almost ladies, except for Annie. Kirsten produces. Amanda does ad sales. Emily LaFour, what's up, girl? she does my booking.
That's great.
I rent from Lana. Like, I love it. It's
love the ladies.
I love the ladies.
Listen, you're very sweet to apologize. It's all good. And I appreciate that you have been so distraught about it.
I was. Listen.
Ryan called me without my skit. I'm filming the second season of Kenan Thompson sitcom, so I'm on set all the time. So you called and I was like, let me call you back, and I forgot. And then you came all the way down to the Comedy Store to tell me, and I was like, oh my God, it's so okay.
I was in the booth in the corner like, okay, all right.
You're so
sweet. And then
sweet.
I walked over and I think I'm going to the green room and I catch in the dark corner and I'm like, and you were so sweet.
It's all good. It happens. These things happen.
Yeah, they don't though, but it did. And here's the beautiful part is that we do have the audio for the episode
all right.
And it's a great episode. So what we're going to do is we're going to do an abbreviated little episode now and we're going to share some stories about just being shit on and cut out of things and dropped. And then we'll go into the audio of your episode and we're going to put video up of your tour. So everybody knows where to go find you.
Nice.
But your episode was so good because you talk about your grandma and your life. I remember when he said the video was gone, I was like, more than, and I know too, people are like, it's the Honeydew. No. Yeah. We could hide behind the fuck up. No, that's just not the way I operate.
Right.
Though. We wouldn't be where we are if we fucked up everything. We're like, nah, that's the way we do it.
Right.
Fuck that shit. No. But.
You were upset because I cried on the video.
God, I go more.
Ryan goes, Fortune cried.
Oh, God. I go, please. More than the embarrassment, more than the ads, more than all of it I'm losing. Please don't make me call Fortune and tell her that video is gone because she cried about her grandma.
I cried, but probably it's for the best.
And I cried.
I probably don't have a great cry face, so maybe the audio is just exactly what people need, and that's it.
Well, you're very sweet to be sweet about this.
Of course.
So again, thank you. But seriously, let's talk about some... Because I asked you, I said, you ever been cut because you played sports and stuff? You started telling me that you played soccer, but it wasn't it wasn't girls' league soccer.
Well, I was obsessed with soccer as a kid. I like went to a game where my brothers were playing, and anything they did, I wanted to do. So I remember I was wearing dresses my whole, like every day, my whole life from when I could put on a dress to 5 years old. My mom had an entire closet full of dresses. I went to a soccer game. I was like, this is the best. Never wanted a dress on.
No, for that on.
Again
huh?
in my life.
Shorts and sweats.
That was
and stuff.
It. Umbros, yeah, shirt, umbro, you know, yeah. T-shirts. And so I joined the soccer team. But, you know, back then, women's soccer was not as, like it is these days, especially in a small town. Like, in this, because we had Chapel Hill, like, you know, Mia Hamm was huge.
Yeah.
But that was kind of a little bit later in my life, childhood. And also just the women's teams hadn't developed yet. And so you had to play with boys, which was fine. But I had a coach that just would not let me play. And I was on this team for like 6 years.
Nah.
Yes.
Same coach.
He would not. If he let me play. and I get it. Looking at me, I probably, you know, you're like, well, you're probably not an athlete. But I was. I was very athletic. I was good in sports was my thing.
Well, I've learned too that someone's body type does not define athletic. Like I watch these 300 and some pound NFL linemen with guts hanging over and they're running 40s faster than me. They're out there pushing human beings for 3 hours. I'm like, I couldn't do that for a minute. Clearly are athletic.
I played tennis and soccer in college. And my tennis coach always was like, how does your body move like this? And I was like, I don't know. But I thought I was bad at soccer because I never got to play and I would be crushed every game. Like I would go home so sad, but there was nowhere else to play at the time. And my dad would get so mad. I think he told the coach off at one point. And,
much time would you get?
I mean, like, couple sometimes not at all.
No, there'd be times you didn't even get in.
There was times not even get in, and then if I did, it was like 5 minutes. And the time I didn't get in, my dad would be like, "They're supposed to be having fun, you know what I mean? You're like, what are you doing?"
Right.
But I love my team, and I stayed on the team till sixth grade, and then the team turned. They called it select, where you would the travel team basically, and we didn't have the money to do it, so I had to kind of quit, and I remember I joined another team in the town over and was like the best one on the team.
Yeah. So, I was gonna ask you,
for like all those years, I thought I sucked at soccer.
That's the thing, people make you feel something about yourself. No,
but
don't
I
let
just,
them.
I just had happened to have a coach who, you know, made the decision early on that I was a certain way, and sports was like huge in my life. I played, like I said, I mean. Up until the pandemic, I was in a soccer league every Monday night for 15 years in Glendale.
Is it indoor?
It was 7-on-7 outdoor.
Wow, okay.
And I loved it, but now it's the league's kind of done.
So, yeah.
And I probably don't need to be playing soccer at my age.
I mean, my daughter's playing now, so I already got my sambas. I'm out there kicking it around again. I'm telling you, I don't care. I'm almost 50, and I still have muscle memory on touch.
Oh, yeah.
The ball at my feet, I can still grab it, move it. If I get in a wheelchair, I'm still gonna figure out if I can do that shit.
Well, as an adult, there are very few times that you get to have camaraderie, right? Where you're like high fiving people, you're rooting for people.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's like a cool feeling because life is stressful.
It's
We're
a really
working,
good point. Yeah.
And so I would go on Monday night. Every Monday night, I was like, people would ask me to do shows. I'd be like, this is the one night for myself. I'm playing soccer. And I would be so stressed about work or whatnot. I'd go play. I'm cheering people on, high-fiving. You know, it was so good for my soul. But your body does reach a point where it's like, maybe don't break your ankle and not be able to film because you're playing soccer.
Unless you can turn into a fucking empire like Tom Segura and Burt did. Yeah.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So, sports are always a
So I wanted to ask you real quick, did you ever, in the brief amount of time you got in during your games in 6 years, did you ever score, get an assist, anything where this guy was like, oh, maybe there's a little something here?
I don't remember, honestly.
Yeah.
I'm sure my confidence wasn't great. I was, at that point, on defense, and I never loved defense. It was boring to me. But the... ironically, I stopped playing soccer. I did that team for a year where I realized I could play. Then I got to junior high. Again, no women's team in
even
junior,
back then? Really?
Yeah, back then. They did not get a women's soccer team until my senior of high school. And at that point, I was invested in the tennis team. So I did not play soccer from the age.
Did it bum you out that there was the opportunity to play your senior year and you didn't? So were they the same season, tennis?
Yeah, they were the same season, yeah. So from the age of 13 until 20, never touched a soccer ball.
Oh.
And then my senior year of college, I was like, I'm going to try out for the soccer team in college. And I was the starting forward.
Hell yeah.
Not touched a soccer ball in 7 years.
You ever find that old coach?
No, I was like, you know, can you imagine me like
now
finding my childhood soccer
you
coach?
Need to tell
like,
a story.
Hey, come here, you asshole! but that's the power that coaches have, and I had amazing coaches, and I had awful coaches, but they
right.
have a lot of power over kids' self esteem. It
they
sucks,
do.
But like they can really make or break your spirit in a team setting, especially a sport that you love and you're playing often. Yeah.
I talk about it with my friends now. Our little league coach literally would smoke a fucking cigarette and lean over your back to show you how to hold the bat with the cigarettes like burning in your eyes. And she's like, why aren't you hitting it? I'm like, because my fucking eyes are burning from that goddamn cigarette. Like, you could. I think about that now. Like, if a coach lit up a cigarette next to the dugout today, people would be like, what the fuck are you doing? This was only 20-some years ago.
Yeah,
it wasn't that long ago.
Back in the day, people just were running wild. Like,
running
we did
wild.
Whatever.
Drinking in the car on the way to the game. Like,
we were in the back
booze,
of pickup
bro.
Trucks, no seatbelts, no helmets. It was a different time for sure. But, I mean, my brother coaches his kids.
He does.
He's an assistant coach on a baseball team, you know. And, you know, it's cool when you see that him care about it and put time into it. And I know a lot of people that coach, it's like probably they're not – that's not what their dream was. So you have some of that, you know, those who can't kind of situations too. But if you're a good coach you can really, really shape somebody, you know, the good coaches in my life still to this day stick with me and I remember them and they were such a good influence.
Yeah,
you know?
I had a coach very young, Bill Hoffman. He was a soccer coach and we were, I've told this story before, but I was cut from the soccer team and it was very cliquey.
Oh yeah.
So there were a lot of us that were good that weren't getting to play because we weren't our parents were friends with their parents. It was very cliquey.
Right.
So we created an organization. Oh. They were Freedom. We created our own team. We were called South Carroll. We were South Carroll County, so we called ourselves South Carroll. And the thing about us, then this guy Bill Hoffman came in and started watching the Germans play soccer, and he was watching the way they ran the triangle.
Okay.
Like Phil Jackson, everybody, this triangle. And we're like, so he would start teaching us how, you know, if you have two people here, one's here, you're in a triangle. So one can always run to an open space.
Right.
You're always working together. You're moving in threes, not one, and everyone's chasing, or twos, we're going down in threes.
Right.
And I still remember to this day, like that dude opened our eyes from the strong side and the weak side and crossing the ball and not just towing this fucking thing.
Right.
And we got in that fucking league. And his mantra and ours, it wasn't let's go beat Freedom for not having us.
Yeah.
Our thing was they're a stepping stone on the way to North Carroll. North Carroll was the team that dominated this league for like a decade.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. And we went right into Freedom, beat their ass. They were way more like, we were like, you're nothing. You're just on
you're
the way,
nothing.
Bro. You're not. And we did. We won it like every year after that. We kicked that ass
and it's
every
such,
year.
It's such a that feeling of winning, working hard, and seeing it pay off is a real character building experience too.
That's why I'm so against participation trophies and shit like that.
You
like,
gotta lose sometimes.
You gotta
be just. I mean, I
teach your kids how to be a good loser.
Yeah.
Okay. You learn way more from losing than you will ever learn from winning.
Oh yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. And that getting crushed sticks
it's
with you.
Yeah,
you know?
Fuck yeah. Yes.
So I highly recommend. Not everyone's athletic. I get that. So sports aren't a part of every kid's life. But
everyone can be a teammate.
They can be a teammate. And I think being a teammate is big for character building as well. Just learning how to be on a team.
Depend on someone.
Yeah.
And be there for someone.
Exactly.
You know, watch, be a part of a loss together. Yeah. Be a part of a win together. You're right.
Yeah.
To build it up and to go, you know, to give me a, like I say, my stepson's got fucking third place trophies that are this big and they're broken.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, man,
well, he has
we got a ribbon for third place.
Right. And he probably doesn't feel an attachment to
nothing.
It because, you know, maybe he didn't have to do as much for it as, you know, he is something else he worked so hard for, you know. But, yeah, I always tell any parent, I'm not a parent, but I always am like, if you have a kid that has any inclination towards a sport, put them on a team. Just let them, you know, just have that experience. I think it's really cool. They'll have some heartbreak, and I'm sure that's tough for a parent to watch, but man, it does make you who you are.
Absolutely. We were talking before the show too, you mentioned some other times you've been like, you say you cut out of stuff in Hollywood. Like, what have you done? That
oh man, I mean, talking about preparing yourself for rejection.
Doesn't it?
I mean, if you come into a business like Hollywood, you just be prepared for no's constantly. I mean, that's half our job is to learn how to take rejection.
Way more no's than yes's, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, I had all those no's for many, many years before I ever got, you know, a break. I tested twice for SNL.
Did you?
Yeah, they flew me out there. This was 2009, 2010, and that was the dream for me. I was like, I watched it my whole life. It was everything to me.
Me too, growing up.
And I was just like, this is it, you know, and you don't get it. And they don't tell you don't get it. You just see the announcement that they hired other people.
That's how it is. Oh, shit.
So, you know, that was crushing because nothing was happening for me then. I couldn't barely get an agent then.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
And so you learn to deal with that kind of rejection. And then I finally got a break when I did Chelsea Lately, and that opened up a lot of doors for me. But it certainly did not stop the nose, you know. I did my own sitcom pilot that Tina Fey produced, and we filmed it, and it didn't get picked up, and I had that taste of like what it would be like to have my own show. Like, my name was on all the golf carts and the production offices. Oh. And so
it's Tina Fey. So
it's
you think, you know, going into this business, there's a more than not, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But you got Tina Fey, you got this, mm-hmm. you got this, and then you hear it doesn't go.
Yeah, Annie Potts from Designing Women was playing my mom. I was playing myself. It was like unbelievable. That no crushed me. That crushed me. I mean, that was like a face in the plate kind of, because it was my story, you know.
Yeah.
It was based on my life.
We don't want you.
Yeah, we don't want
you. Or
your
story or anything to do with you.
The parents were based on my parents, you know. It was like such a personal loss or no. So that was by far one of the hardest no's I've gotten. And that was a rejection that just went so deep. You know, in a way, like, I shut my computer for like a year and a half.
I was gonna say,
for writing.
You did.
Yeah. I did my other jobs, you know, touring, and I was doing the Mindy. Well, it did lead to the Mindy project. So there was a silver lining. But as far as development, I just shut my computer And listen, I mean, you know, if any writer out here will say, you know, that you got to get like 10 no's or before you get a yes. So
before you get a maybe.
We had sold a couple before that. But so we were very early in the stages of, you know, being a TV developer. But yeah, it definitely took me off my track development wise and writer wise for a bit. But then finally, we started writing movies, and we sold 2 movies to Amblin, Spielberg's company. Mm-hmm. And so I'm back on the development train. But yeah, you just have to kind of dust yourself off. But yeah, I've had like 2 movies. I've flown out to places to film, rearranged my schedule to do it.
Your life.
And I got cut out. And sometimes it is truly nothing to do with you. Like, it, you know, you take it so personally.
Of course,
like, you're like,
yeah.
Oh, did I suck? But then you do realize that, like, your part didn't serve the story, or it made the movie longer. It was like, just there are things about movies that are out of your hands that you just, some, like, I've learned now that if I film something, until they tell me, you know, that the movie, here's the release date and you're in it, like,
and the check,
I don't
cash.
Say anything.
Yeah, nothing.
Well, the check will still cash.
That's the thing. Isn't it crazy the amount of money this industry wastes?
Oh, my God,
I'd like to have 10% of them, 1% of the money they waste in
this
industry.
Oh, just shooting that pilot of mine that got a no was probably $2 to $3 million to shoot it. And it's a no. And that happens every week in this business.
And is that not something that reverts back to eventually that you can now go sell somewhere else with the amount of social media and everything? I mean, with the amount of streaming and everything available these days?
You would be so surprised how hard it is to sell things.
I would be so surprised how much people don't want you.
I mean,
I know.
You know, I remember
Tom and Christina did a sitcom recently, and they had a deal where basically if they don't pick it up, they still get paid this X amount. So I remember they didn't pick it up, and I called Tom, like, I'm so sorry, dude. I go, didn't you guys, like, get paid? He's like, yeah, that's how much they didn't want it. I just thought, I was like, yeah, I guess not. That's how
I know.
We don't want this so bad. We're going to pay you this money to fucking get the fuck out of here.
that's the, like, for lack of a better word, the mind fuck of this business. Is as stand-ups, like, we can see progress. You know what I mean? We know if our tickets are selling. We can literally see people in the theater.
That's right.
So you'll be at a, you know, I feel like career-wise, I'm at probably the best place I've been. I'm selling tickets. People are showing up. The audience is showing me, hey, we like you.
That's right.
The industry is like, nope. You know,
but the audience has been right all along.
The audience
is always
tell you who they want to see.
Right.
And it's weird that the industry and that don't line up better. You know what I mean? Because, you know, Tom's selling out arenas, you know.
Arenas.
And you're like, you can't figure out a show with this guy. You know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I never understand the business in that way. But then they'll give, you know, somebody else 5 chances and they don't go,
ever.
They don't go. And
yeah.
You're like, well, can't we pivot and try something new?
Yeah.
If that's not working, maybe let's try.
Where's the exec that lets someone at Tom's level or your level just go, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
That's exactly what the fuck we're going to do. You've proven yourself all the way up to this point. What I'm going to do is shut the fuck up, make sure it's going the way you need it to go,
right.
And I'm going to take my money off of that and sit back and fold my feet.
But that does not happen.
Never.
It does not happen.
Never.
I'm trying to sell a thing right now. It's hard.
It's crazy.
And you go, man, what else do I have to do to show people that audiences are on board?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like
I've been fortunate enough to sell 2 series.
Yeah.
And one to Comedy Central, 1 to E.
Mm-hmm.
You did the Comedy Central Comedy Jam and killed it. And I love to find out that you're still friends with Natalie. That made me feel so good from that show.
From that show.
I love that, dude. And then, you know, I've done these other ones where I've worked with people for literally a year. And then they just go, never mind.
Yeah.
Or I'm taking another job at another company. So see you later. And this is gone. You're like, what the fuck?
But you know, it's like that. The business has always been like that. It's not going to change.
Never.
So the best part about being a stand-up is that is one part of the business they don't control. You either connect with fans or audiences or you don't.
That's it.
That you either work on your stand-up, people show up and listen to it, or you let it fall by the wayside and it kind of, you know, you go off to pasture or whatever. But if you work at it and really build an audience, you can have a successful career in live performance. And so when the business is crazy and fickle and the industry doesn't seem to know what they want, I just go pivot into stand up. I work on my writing. I get on the road.
That's all you can do.
And that's all you can do.
That's right.
Yeah. So the no's eventually lead to some yeses. And again, it's all character building.
It is.
But I've had a lot. I've had enough character building. I'm ready to have a show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm a decent person. Can I have a show now?
I've built this character. Please.
I've had a lot of character building. I'm ready.
Oh, man. Well, look, I'm gonna stop it here because I know you got to get out of here. And I thank you so much for even coming back for this amount of time again. So what we're going to do is from here, you're going to get the rest of Fortune's episode that she came here and originally did, which is an amazing episode. All right. So go see Fortune on tour. Please plug it again.
FortuneFeemster.com. I'm in so many cities coming up. New York City, New Haven, Cincinnati, Cleveland. I mean, Atlanta, you name it. I'm Brea.
I'm doing Brea too.
Yeah. So tons of stuff in the new year. So yeah, check it out. And when you're listening to the audio, just imagine what I would look like crying.
Thank you so much, for real.
Oh, my pleasure, Ryan.
All right. For many people in the U.S. concerned about the cost of health insurance, there are no good options. You either go uninsured or you pay through the nose for a high deductible plan with questionable coverage, all because of a broken health insurance system. It's like being stuck with an outdated cable TV plan and not knowing about Netflix. Introducing CrowdHealth. It isn't health insurance. It's a better way to pay medical expenses. CrowdHealth is a community of people who are tired of paying for a broken system, a place where you can get a simple, flexible, and affordable way to pay for your health care. Being in the CrowdHealth community can save hundreds of dollars monthly and put thousands of dollars back in your pocket. Membership as a monthly subscription is flexible. You can start or stop whenever it's convenient for you. And using their app, you can find nearly any doctor in the country ranked from 1 star to 5 stars. It's simple. You scan your bills and then throw them away, and CrowdHealth will take it from there. It's a community of health-conscious members who want to get and stay healthy in return for lower prices. CrowdHealth is able to offer amazing prices because of its community of health-conscious members, but they have an amazing offer just for my listeners. Get your first 6 months for just $99 a month. That's a savings of almost 50% versus their standard pricing and a lot less than one of those crappy high-deductible plans. Just go to joincrowdhealth.com/99 and enter code Honeydew at sign up. That's joincrowdhealth.com/99. Promo code Honeydew. CrowdHealth is not health insurance. It's a community powered alternative. Terms and conditions may apply. Buying a home in today's market can feel so unattainable. All right. I still rent. I know how expensive it is out here and what you got to do. It's ridiculous. All right. That's why you need to, because I am now, listen to the How to Buy a Home podcast. It will show you just how realistic buying a home can be and make the process simple. The truth is, most realtors would rather not work with first-time home buyers. There's just too much to teach them, and they don't think it's worth it. That's why David Sedoni started the How to Buy a Home podcast, because he knew first-time home buyers weren't getting the info they needed, and he knew he could help. But the How to Buy a Home podcast isn't just for first-timers. David shares insider secrets like how to buy a home with just 3.5% down and answers questions like, is now a good time to buy? How much over asking should I offer? How do I start? They've heard from Honeydew listeners who have already benefited from listening to the How to Buy a Home podcast, and David can help you too. Trust us. If you're thinking about buying a home anywhere in the U.S. next month, next year, or in 5 years, listen to the How to Buy a Home podcast today. This is a show that can help you on a decision that can build financial stability for the rest of your life. Find How to Buy a Home wherever you listen to podcasts. Now, let's get back to the do. Please welcome Fortune Feemster, everybody. Welcome to the Honeydew Fortune.
Oh, thanks, Ryan.
I'm so glad you're here.
I'm happy to be here.
I know. We've tried this for a little while.
Yeah.
You did the right thing.
We talked about it. We ran into each other at like the Laugh Factory right before the pandemic. like a week. I think it was like a week before. And you're like, come do my podcast. I was like, yeah, for sure. And then the world shut down.
Shut down.
And then I was pretty hunkered down because my
wife.
But
I told Emily right away, like, you put Fortune on the list.
Oh, well, yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, my wife was really hunkered down. So I was not doing many things outside. But I was also filming stuff, too. So I had to be really careful because I was on two different film sets.
Plus Brenda.
Plus me and Brenda.
Brenda is my shit. I'm so jealous. Listen, I got to tell you, because I think I may have said it already. I am so fucking jealous of the what you've done with Tim.
Oh, thank you.
It makes me giddy inside when I hear Tim. I mean, that is like a four. You've made Tim a four-syllable word.
So I have this character, Brenda, for those of you who don't know, who's this like, it's me, like in a wig or when my hair is straightened for a role. And I have makeup on. I pretend I'm Brenda, and I say, hey, y'all, my name's Brenda. I'm just sitting here with my husband, Tim. And I pretend to be this exasperated housewife who is so, I swear to God, Tim. I'm always yelling at him, but then he gives her turquoise and she gives him a blowjob.
Yeah. Turquoise for some head.
Because in my brain, that's how straight marriages
that's
work.
That's how it is. It's turquoise and oral sex. Yeah. Well, please plug and promote everything you want right now. Your tour, your social, where they can see all of it, please.
Yeah, I'm going on a big theater tour. I'm doing club dates this summer at a bunch of places. I'll be in Vegas soon with David Spade at the Mirage and going to be in Sacramento. I mean, all over. I start in Boston and then go all over the U.S. So it's my Too Sweet, Too Salty tour. It's all new material because a lot of people saw my special on Netflix called Sweet and Salty. If you hadn't seen it, it's still up there, obviously, on Netflix. But yeah, the shows they're selling. We're adding shows everywhere. It's going to be super fun.
And where can they go? What's your website where they can go to see all that?
It's my name, fortunefemster.com/tour, and it has all the dates up there. And then I do a radio show every morning with Tom Papa for Netflix on SiriusXM channel 93. So that's something I'm on every day as well. And I just bop around doing different movies and TV things. But that's
and what's your Instagram, social, all that?
My name at Fortune Femster.
I'm stoked for, first of all, that you even had time to do this. I know how fucking busy you are.
Oh, well, I wanted to do it. I always love seeing you, and I wanted to come in here, so I'm glad it worked out.
You're always a breath of fresh air, and I really want to get to know you better, because we don't get to always talk about our lives and everything. So please, let's start from the beginning for you. Where are you originally from, and what was, parents married, brothers, sisters?
Yeah. I'm from a very, very small town called Belmont, North Carolina. When I was born, it was around 5,000 people. Now it's around like 11,000, so it's a metropolis. it's right outside of Charlotte. It's about 30 minutes from Charlotte. And nice folks, it's a small town, but like good people. Sometimes when the South gets a bad rap for being narrow-minded and whatnot. And I'm not saying that doesn't exist, but these are like really kind-hearted people in my hometown. So I grew up in a good place with good people. My parents were just like working-class folks. My mom's was a school teacher, a special ed teacher for about 30 years. My dad had a bunch of different jobs. He was more blue-collar, like he sold like cleaning products or worked at a trucking company. He retired and then ran out of money. And then he went and was a janitor at a elementary school for a long time until he just retired recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But kids loved him.
Yeah.
He ran the department. And so he was the only male on staff at that school. So they would always like drawing pictures and stuff. Mr. Mike, it was really cute. And they split when I was 12. So
what was that like for you?
When you're 12, it's like the worst thing ever. But, in hindsight, you kind of look back and you're like, well, they never seemed to like each other.
Is that right?
Yeah.
They weren't very affectionate toward each other in front of you?
No.
Are you an only child?
No, I have two older brothers.
Okay.
And I think it was one of those things, like they started dating in high school, broke up, then got back together after my mom graduated college. My dad went to the Navy. And then it was like one of those lust situations, as my mom likes to say. And I'm like,
she says that.
I'm like, I don't want to hear about that. That's gross.
Lust situation.
I think, you know, they had a good marriage in the beginning. I think the kids really complicated things, and not having money was always an issue. Like, we did not have much money growing up. And it's weird because I touch on it in my stand-up special. My mom comes from money.
Okay.
Her family had a lot of money.
What did they do?
Her dad was a very prominent contractor. He built all of these churches and schools and buildings all over North Carolina. But he died unexpectedly when she was 17. And my grandmother was that typical, like, amazing woman, but had not worked. And, you know, it was that time where the man took care of everything. So through a series of just bad money management, she lost all the money.
Oh.
Basically, they had a construction business and hardware store. And, you know, when the Lowe's and the Home Depot's came in, it destroyed all these mom and pop shops. And she was too proud to declare bankruptcy. So she paid off all the debts, which is like, no one does that. And then she also had a son that had some gambling issues, and she was paying off that stuff. And and then my mom, you know, my dad just was never a moneymaker. And my mom, obviously, as a teacher, isn't making money. And there was three kids. So it was very common to, like, have creditors calling all day, every day. I mean, I was used to, like, Saturday, 7 a.m. Here's, you know, because then you had the landlines,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And the lights would get shut off. You go, oh, they didn't pay
the bill.
Yeah. But it was weird because we were, like, in a, you know, North Carolina, you have the big two-story houses. So from the outside looking in, you'd never know.
Right.
But I'm not saying I was, like, destitute by any means. I had opportunity still and a roof over my head. It was just not a, like, stable situation.
Well, when your parents split, did you split time between mom and dad? Like, were you split custody, or did you live with mom mostly?
Mostly my mom. Yeah, my dad's, like, God bless him. I love him, but he's a very simple Southern man. He's not, like, known for his nurturing. Like, he didn't know how to do that kind of thing. You know, my mom was always the one that did it. So he was living in a trailer, and I would go there sometimes. It was small. There wasn't much room for me. And so mainly our, like, thing together was he would, like, come by on a Saturday night and take me to the Blockbuster video to get a video and, like, drop me back off at home. That was, like, our dad.
Oh, he wouldn't even watch it with you?
He wouldn't even watch it with me. He's like, I got a date. I'm not watching this movie.
Oh, that's too good.
or involve food. I was, you know, I've been a real fatty. He would take me to get some sort of fatty meal somewhere. That's how they showed me love. My family would show me love was through food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I have a very uncomfortable relationship with food because I'm the same way. I should say. I eat when I'm happy.
Yeah.
I eat when I'm sad.
Same.
Let's celebrate. Oh, it's miserable. Yeah. Let's eat something good. I'm bored.
Yeah.
Food.
Yeah, my parents, you know, whenever they were kind of dealing with their own stuff then, you know, and I don't think any parent, any adult, like, thinks you're going to be divorced, you know, so that was just as jarring for them. So I think they would just be like, oh, here's some cake. Like, I'm trying to deal with my stuff. So I was always like, I'll take you to, you know, we had Bojangles is what it's called in the South. You know, and that's how they would sort of appease me while they were dealing with their stuff. Mm. So, yeah.
So you got nurturing from mom and love from mom, but you definitely had a connection with your dad. He was present.
Yeah. I definitely had a good relationship with both my parents. I mean, my parents were still kind of growing up, too. I sort of became the adult. I became the parent in a lot of ways. But I had I was very, very lucky because my grandmother lived just around the corner. So she was a big, stable presence in my life. Because even before my parents got divorced, you know, with three kids, like you're outnumbered. The parents are outnumbered. So they're like, and we were all very active. All of us played three sports a year on teams, and we were in scouts, and we were in all this stuff. So, like, somebody was having to take us somewhere. So usually my grandmother was one carting me around Belmont.
Oh, so you had a good close. That's your mom's mom we're talking
about?
That's
my mom's mom, yeah. And she was really tight. My dad didn't have a relationship with his family. He did not grow up in very good circumstances. So anytime I, like, start to be like, oh, my childhood was hard, I think about my dad. And I'm like, no, I had it pretty easy. Because, you know, people have a lot worse if you don't at least have some love in your life. And he wasn't lucky to have that. So my grandmother became a surrogate mom for him as well. So even though my parents' marriage fizzled out, there was a lot of love there and still is. They're friends.
Oh, they are. Okay.
They are, yeah. There's a lot of love there because they've known each other since they were 17, you know?
Is that how young they were when they got together? High school, 17?
When they first got together, yeah.
Then that lust situation.
They broke up,
the
got back, I think, at 23. That lust.
So tell me more about your grandma. It sounds like you had a really close relationship. See, I love that because I lived with my grandma for a while.
Yeah.
And I also lived with her sister. Like, we're big on extended family.
Yeah, I mean, my grandmother was just like my safety net. Like, when everything was kind of crazy with the divorce and my parents figuring that out, she was always the constant in my life. She was the one that was calling my friend's house, being like, you know, don't overstay your welcome. Like, you know, I would stay with her a lot. And I always knew she was there because she was just around the corner. So there was something about that that was really comforting. And she was just a really good woman. Like, she was a good person. And everyone in my hometown knew her and loved her. She was very selfless. She would always, like, she was, you know, at that point, a much older woman, so she would spend her days like gardening and cutting roses, and like she would drop off roses or food at the bank for the librarians, at the school secretaries. Like, everyone knew her. Like,
that's nice.
She had a light about her.
Yeah.
So I was like obsessed with her. Just, I was like her shadow. Everywhere she went, I was.
What's her name?
With her. Her name's Evelyn.
Evelyn.
But I called her Nana. And so she sort of instilled a sort of old fashioned thing in me, like an old soul sort of thing, because I was hanging out with her and her friends a lot.
And
you
were,
yeah,
it was the old ladies.
It was
you.
Me and the old ladies, which I think that's why I was obsessed with, like, the Golden Girls.
That's awesome. I love it.
But it was my friends loved her too, because she would pick us up from sports practice and. She would, like, do these – she would take us by these places and be like, girls, look at this. These are cherry trees, or these are dogwoods, and, like, old school stuff where, like, young kids are just, like, thinking about New Kids on the Block or whatever. And my friends were like, oh, that's really cool. Or she'd watch birds and name the bird. Like, very – things you don't think about. And so I have an appreciation for these very random – old school things like that because of her influence.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I love old ladies who play cards and love sports and shit like that. They're all just sitting there talking shit and everything else. I don't know. But the Golden Girls, that's still great TV.
It's awesome TV.
It is.
And I was like, I just want to be in a house where everyone eats cheesecake all the time. That's all I cared about. I was like, they eat cheesecake whenever they want? That's amazing.
So you said you were playing sports and stuff a lot. What was school like for you? Were you in high school especially? Were you playing sports in high school too?
Yeah, I played – I was a big tennis player. Tennis was my best sport. I played basketball and softball because that's just in my genetics. I mean, you can't be a lesbian and not play sports, especially those two. I grew up playing soccer. And I was obsessed with soccer, but that was before my hometown was not progressive enough to have a women's team.
Well, you had a co-ed team?
So, no, I was like the only girl on the soccer team. But when you got to junior high, they didn't allow girls, so I had to quit soccer.
No way, they didn't even allow it?
And back then, it was different.
What year is this? 80s?
That would have been, I went to junior high, would have been like 94.
1994, and
but there was women's soccer around because like Mia Hamm was huge,
sure,
and that was
yeah.
at Chapel Hill, you know. Mm-hmm. But it just hadn't gotten to us yet. So I quit soccer, but then played on my college soccer team my senior year of college.
You did?
So it all came back. All yeah, right. And I played tennis in college too.
What college did you go to?
It was a small women's college in Raleigh called Peace College.
And you played tennis and soccer in college? Mm-hmm. Damn, you're a good athlete then.
I was a really good athlete. I played in the tennis league out here for years in L.A. I was in a soccer league out here until the pandemic. Every Monday night I played a 7-on-7 league. I love sports. And even though
and soccer?
Yes, soccer.
Where's that?
It was in Glendale.
Okay.
And then I played in a men's tennis league out here. And so sports has been a big part of my life. It's just now that I'm getting older, and now it's like I can't be going on tour and like hurting myself playing soccer.
You can't be Tom and Bert. And
exactly.
for
so
Christine.
I think I've retired my soccer cleats now. My wife was like, "We're getting to the age where this is probably not a good idea for you." But I love team sports and playing sports so much. That camaraderie was, I hate that I can't do it anymore, but it was because it was such a big part of my life. But
me too. I remember, you know, everywhere we went, we had a soccer ball, a glove,
yeah,
something. We were always playing sports.
Yeah.
Always.
So that helped offset the food probably for me. But I have this weirdly athletic body, even though it's a big body. Like my tennis coach in college was mystified. She's like, "I don't understand how you move the way you move," like, because I was super fast and like running balls down constantly. I was like, I don't know.
Short twitch powers. You know, Tom told me the same thing about Bert. Like,
yeah.
Tom hired a tennis coach to help him play Bert in tennis.
Yeah.
And then Bert was serving it. And the guy's like, "I can't believe what I'm fucking seeing."
That's
He's
crazy.
Like, this is a D1 serve. He's like, "The rest of his game is shit, but the serve
yeah.
is a D1 serve." And he's just like, "I don't know how that body is doing that."
Yeah, I would like ace these guys left and right.
Oh, so you and Bert should have played.
I know.
No, because
yeah.
then both of you will get hurt.
I know. We're all old.
Ruin all your tours.
I know. Every time Tom.
Both tours are shut down because you guys played tennis.
Tom posted that latest post with his arm in a sling. Yeah. I'm like, what? Yeah. No, man. Jeez.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
So you were you popular in school then, I guess, with all the sports and everything? You're pretty
yeah,
popular,
I mean,
right?
I think junior high, I was very awkward, very shy. I'm actually still shy. I'm more shy than people realize. But once I'm comfortable, mm-hmm. I'm totally fine. But I sort of had to train myself to get out of the shy stage. Like, so I got more popular as I got older because I started gaining more confidence. So by high school, I had more confidence. So I would have moments of being funny. I would watch SNL all the time and recreate those sketches for my friends at tennis and make them laugh, you know. So mm-hmm. I would make friends by making them laugh. And so I was friends with, like, all the groups. But it wasn't like I was, like, you know,
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Popular girl. It's just people liked me because I was nice to people and I made them laugh. So I used my personality to make, you know, get people on my side. But I was not popular with boys. They wanted to be my friend. We would like high five and stuff, but nobody was asking me on dates and whatnot. But yeah, school was a great place for me. Because things were a little chaotic at home, school was kind of like my saving grace of like stability, because I'm a Cancer. I know that sounds very LA, but I'm a Cancer, so I like stability. And when there's chaos, I try to find the place where I can just fit into that place and excel. So yeah. I was an overachiever for sure.
Okay. Good student as well.
Really good student. Yeah. I made all A's and I graduated summa cum laude in college.
Damn.
Because I like never miss class. I think I only missed like one class my whole 4 years of college. I was a nerd.
But turmoil at home pushed you into that. Yeah, yeah, it did.
And it can truly push you in different directions. My mm-hmm. older brother, you know, he got pushed into the more party phase of his life. And I think I also learned from that, seeing him be more of a wild child. It made me kind of go the opposite way.
So did you have boys and stuff asking you out at an early age or anything
like that?
No. No,
we just never, I think because, well, I didn't know I was gay, and I had, having two older brothers, I've always had a nice camaraderie with men. I like men, and I get along well with men, but we always had that buddy vibe.
Totally know what
and
you
that,
mean.
And that's a thing that I don't think people realize about gay people's journey, especially when you come out later, is you're being told no, like very early on, and you don't even know why. Even if a guy's not verbally saying to me no, I'm not the object of their affection. So it definitely like affects you in a way you don't really realize your self-esteem's being affected. So you have to find a way to rise above it. And that, I think, is why sports and school and the grades were trying to overcompensate for that lack of being the object of affection.
Do you mind talking about it a little more?
Sure.
Can I ask you about it?
Sure.
Well, I mean, what you said, you didn't know you were gay at that age. I don't even know if anyone knows what they are at that age. But what age do you realize you are?
It started seeping, like coming to the surface, like at 23.
Okay.
But it wasn't, I didn't come out until 25. So 25. I definitely was
so you're
a
out
late
of college
bloomer.
And everything then.
Yeah. In hindsight, I could go back to age 5 and pinpoint 1,000 things to be like, yeah, obviously. Any outfit you look at, my haircut, like there's lots of signs, and I'm sure other people knew, but it was a different time, and I talk about that in my special as well. It was a different time because now, like, being gay is such a fabric of our society. Like it's you know, gay people now everywhere. A lot of times growing up, the gay people, especially in a small town in the South, they were in the closet. So they'd be like, this is my wife. You're like, wait, what? And it was very normal I did not know one out gay person.
Really?
My entire childhood. I know now that certain people were gay.
But no one openly out.
Wow. I knew several gay people married to women. And and now you're like, oh yeah, well they were gay, but you know it just wasn't common then. You also didn't have. I remember watching like The Real World with like Pedro, it was in San Francisco, and being like, what is this? I don't know anything about this. Like I was so naive because I wasn't aware
or exposed to any of it. Sure.
You didn't have Will and Grace yet. You didn't have all these things. There was no YouTube. There was no internet till I was like 18.
I'm surprised. And even in college, so even though it was a women's college.
It was a women's college, but it was very conservative. It was a Presbyterian school. There was one girl who was out and she had a hard time.
She did.
And so there was nothing about the environment that I was in that was like, this is a safe space to explore whatever. Because I clearly had I had intense feelings for friends at different points of my life that I couldn't explain.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought I was being an angsty teen. And one of my very first stand-up jokes was me saying that I was so, like, hardcore about my friends. My mom would be like, I don't understand why you get so upset when your friend Michelle goes out on dates with a guy. And I was like, because she's my best friend. And it, it cap- encapsulated all the like, I can't put my finger on what this is. You know, but that's what it was. I was so, like, bummed anytime a friend would have a date like you, that I had a crush on. I didn't have, like, a crush on, like, right. every friend.
But before you even get to the point of coming out, mm-hmm. there's the realization that you're going through then, like, well, first I need to understand what this is mm-hmm. before I can even come out of the closet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure that journey to get to that is one fucking anxiety nightmare, and then it's like, okay, here's who I am, and now also I got to do this on top of it. Like, man, that's a lot.
Well, when you're from a really small town, you have to force yourself to learn things outside of the bubble, right? Like, it's just how it is there. It's a small town. Everyone knows each other. So a lot of people stay there. You know, my mom's lived there her whole life. I'm fifth generation of my hometown.
Hometown. Yeah. Okay.
So once I got to college, I started to be exposed to more things. But I was like, oh, my God, there's like, you know, I studied in Mexico for 2 summers because I'd never gotten to have any culture in my life and learn about other people. And like, it blew my mind. Like, the lack of exposure. So I was really trying to learn as much as I could. After I graduated college, I moved to Spain for a year because I just wanted to see. Mm-hmm. I didn't want not having money to keep me from growing, to keep me from learning and learning about other people. So I was really trying to broaden my horizons in a way I wasn't getting back home, you know. And that helped sort of the exposure to everything, just learning about people, gay people of different color, different cultures. Like, I was just trying to learn as much as I could, but I felt very far behind. Mm-hmm. But I was doing the best I could to catch up, you know, I wanted more exposure. And then moving to LA, it's like, finally. Yeah. Everything.
I'm like little Cambodia. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't have anything.
Yeah,
like
learning, eating food that I've never had. I mean, I have such a small palate of like what I thought good food was. You know, I do feel like in a way, because of my sexuality, because of the lack of exposure, I was very responsible in a lot of ways, but I feel like I didn't grow up until much later in my life.
I get that. Totally. Yeah. So when you did finally come out, how did your – I'm wondering about your dad because you said he's a very, old-time Southern man. Was he supportive?
Yeah, no, I'm very lucky with my family. They're fairly liberal. My mom has always been a huge Democrat. But not even politically. It's just – she's always been very open-minded, very – much like supportive of women's rights and gay rights and whatnot, but I had never talked about it, you know, in regards, it's one thing for them to support the movement of whatever, but when it comes to you, all my family was very accepting. I'd moved to LA. I was kind of starting to feel the things you feel, the tingles, and I watched The L Word, and it's like my mind was being blown at all these things, seeing gay people hold hands, just seeing gay people do normal things,
right.
Go to a coffee shop. I never got to see that. It was those little things that was just like blowing my mind. In hindsight, it all feels very naive. It feels very like, holy cow, how could you not know this existed? But I didn't, and it was a different time. So to finally get that exposure did wonders for me, and I finally realized it that's what was the missing puzzle piece my whole life. Something always felt off with me, and I never knew what it was. And once that puzzle piece was put into place, my whole life changed. It opened me up in a way I'd never experienced, the lightness, because everything, I was a very happy person and a very positive person, but the lightness, it was truly like the weight was lifted off my shoulders. So I felt a sense of peace that I'd never felt before. And my family That's was awesome. Very supportive.
It's funny, right? There's all these gimmicks that promise a great night's sleep. I don't care what kind of toppers there are or how heavy a blanket may be. It's lipstick on a pig. If you're sleeping on a terrible mattress, your sleep will be terrible. It's that simple. That's why I recommend sleeping on a Purple mattress. That's because only Purple mattresses have the Gel Flex Grid. It's a super stretchy, ultra squishy material that adapts and flexes around the pressure points and doesn't retain heat. The Gel Flex Grid is amazingly supportive for your back and legs while cushioning your shoulders, neck, and hips, no matter how you sleep. Unlike memory foam, which remembers everything, thanks to the Gel Flex Grid, Purple mattresses bounce back as you move and shift. You'll never have that I'm stuck feeling people get with memory foam. So I got a Purple pillow, and I'm a side sleeper, y'all. And I'm telling you, I don't have to keep pushing it in and fluffing it up and taking my pillowcase and shaking it down like this to get the damn thing fluffed up again. That thing's amazing. So try your Purple mattress risk-free with free shipping and returns. Financing is available too. Getting a great night's sleep starts with having a great mattress. Get a Purple mattress. Go to purple.com/honeydew and use code honeydew. For a limited time, you can get 10% off any order of $200 or more. That's purple.com/honeydew. Code honeydew for 10% off any order of $200 or more. purple.com/honeydew. Promo code honeydew. Terms apply. Look, you know, I'm a big believer in therapy, and I know some people are like, I don't need therapy. Not everybody needs therapy. It'd be good for everybody. Trust me, especially the guy. It's always a guy saying that nobody needs therapy. He doesn't need therapy. All right. Talkspace makes it possible to speak with a licensed therapist right from your phone, your tablet, or your computer. And unlike traditional therapy, you can message your therapist anytime via text, video, or voice. It's 100% secure and stigma-free, the way therapy should be. At Talkspace, your privacy and your security are their number one priority. The app puts you in a private room with just you and your therapist. You can send messages 24/7 and get replies throughout the day. There's no need to wait for a weekly appointment. Talkspace's encryption and added security features keep your conversation fully protected. Join Talkspace today and start moving forward with a single message. Just visit Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month when you use promo code HONEYDEW at sign up. That's $100 off at Talkspace.com, promo code HONEYDEW. You want to know what's spookier than seeing a black cat on Halloween? It's shaving your balls with anything other than Manscaped. Join the 2 million men worldwide by going to Manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code HONEYDEW. All right, you guys know I love the lawnmower. The lawnmower 4.0 is the best thing I've ever used on my balls. I shave them with straight razors on my balls, all kinds of stuff. Razor bumps, all that nasty stuff, all right? Lawnmower 4.0 is where it's at. Their finely tuned pube products feature a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. Oh, did I mention this trimmer is waterproof too? It's a shower essential. That's where I do it, in the shower. Seal the deal with Manscaped's liquid formulations. Their Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner will make sure your pumpkins stay fresh. Trust me when I say this, fellas. Your balls are going to thank you. They have a bunch of other life-changing products on their website, so be sure to check it out. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code HONEYDEW at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code HONEYDEW at manscaped.com. Say trick or treat to your beautiful new Halloweeny with Manscaped. Now, let's get back to the deal.
So let me ask you this then, because I know a lot of our listeners are gay. A lot of people are going through. I have a lot of younger listeners mm-hmm. these days, which is awesome. And yeah. I know a lot of people are going through shit. So, you know, this buildup of whatever it is in our lives, all this anxiety, mm-hmm. looking back in hindsight, what age do you think you could have told everyone, come out, and mm-hmm. it had just been fine? Instead of waiting until 23 yeah. and worrying, like if you, I'm just talking about mm-hmm. your family, by the way.
Right.
You go back, because you said they were accepting. You mm-hmm. think if you knew at 16, 17, you could have said something that had been no damn different?
Yeah. I think it would have been hard to come out in high school.
Yeah.
I think that it was a different time. I don't know. My parents were kind of finding themselves. My dad's very simple in the, like, he's just like, you're my daughter, I love you. Like, that was always his thing. For my mom, it was like, she didn't want my life to be harder. Mm-hmm. Like, her biggest thing was like, I worry.
I see.
I don't want life to be harder for you than it will, you know, be naturally, because life is hard sometimes. But she, you know, she was she would have a, I call him her man, she would have a man friend. Mm-hmm. And she was in that stage of her life of like really trying to be who they wanted her to be. So she went through a thing of like, she was dating very conservative men who would have shunned that. And I don't know.
Really?
I want to give her credit and say I hope that she would have been like, yeah, whatever, it's my daughter. Yeah. But I don't know. Because it was a big influence on her life at the time. So I think to come out then would have been difficult. College might have been okay because I was in college. But again, seeing that girl go through what I saw her go through, that one might have been hard too. So I guess if the journey that I was on, it would have been harder to come out any earlier. But maybe it would have been nice to have known, like in Spain, I could at least had some more fun in Spain.
Yeah, those Spanish ladies are so
pretty girls out there.
I'm a sucker for that black hair.
Yeah, so I wish that I had known back then.
Oh, that's too good.
Yeah.
There was something that you had sent in an email about homecoming, and I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, you had asked if there was like an underdog moment in my life, and that one kind of came up in my memories because I really have a terrible memory. So many people I grew up with or in college are like, remember when you did this? I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. My hometown is a big, like in the South, football's like the big, big thing every Friday night. Everyone goes to the football game. It's like we have a stadium for our high school football team.
Yeah.
So homecoming is a very big deal in my hometown, and it's very pageant-like. And my whole life, it was all the like most popular girls, the pretty girls, the pageant girls were on the homecoming court. And so my senior year, it was never a thing that I wanted to do. I would not be the girl that you would get voted on the homecoming court, and that's how you got on it. You would vote, the whole school would vote who was going to, I think it was like maybe 8 girls who's going to be on the homecoming court, and then you vote again for the winner. So as a joke, like my friends and I were like, wouldn't it be hilarious if I was on the homecoming court? Like I would wear jeans every day because you have to wear a dress every day.
For how long?
And a sash for a week.
Nah.
You have to wear a dress and a sash. And I was like, oh my God, that would be so hysterical. And it kind of like spread like wildfire. Like we got to vote for her on the homecoming court. And it wasn't like people were doing like that. I was in on the joke mm-hmm. with them. And
yeah, they weren't setting you up.
It wasn't one of those old, you know, rom coms where I'm Josie Grossie or whatever. So I got on the homecoming court, and like the people, like everyone was like, "This is like a victory! Like we like somehow went like we're sticking it to the man, like kind of thing," and so. I thought I would be able to, like, you know, sort of make a mockery of it and wear pants every day. But they were so hardcore about it. Like, and I'm such a rule follower that they were like, you have to do this.
So instead of backing out, you fucking went for it?
I went for it. I had no dresses, and my mom made me, like, go to, like, Lane Bryant or something. And she bought me, like, all these old woman dresses. So everything had like shoulder pads, and it was like burnt orange and mustard yellow colors. Everything was like long to the all these girls had these short dresses on. Mine was like to the floor, and I had like kitten heels. I looked like a librarian trying to do this. So it was ridiculous. And then came time for the voting, and it was like all the talk. Like people never cared about homecoming like they did. And it was like, it felt like a movie where it was like, oh my God, is this person really gonna like show people that like it's all about the personality? It's about who, you know, kindness and who you want to win. Or are they gonna go the old way of like, this is the pretty girl, this is the popular girl? And it came down to, I think I was told, I ended up losing, but I was told by someone that worked there, and who knows, that I lost by like 10 votes.
Oh, and, God damn.
Yeah, but and so it was like one of those things where the girl that won, people loved and was popular, but like you could feel like half the stadium just go, oh.
They wanted you so bad.
I had to ride on a car around the football field doing the pageant wave. It was a trip.
Oh, I love
so it was an underdog
that.
Story where the underdog didn't win.
We're not supposed to. We're the comics, though.
Yeah,
we're not supposed
we're
to win.
Clowns.
We're the Bad News Bears. Yeah, we're not supposed
but
to win.
I think it's one of those things that everyone remembered that to this day, you know, that whole thing, because it was like going against tradition.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Tell me about, I want to talk about your grandmom's mm-hmm. passing, though, because I know she was so prominent in your life.
Yeah.
And what was that like for you?
Well, so I think about my grandmother a lot to this day, because a lot of people know that, a lot of people know this at this point, but not everyone that sees me for the first time. So my name's Fortune, and obviously that's a different name. People are always like, oh, that's an unusual name. Well, I grew up as Emily. Emily's my first name. Fortune is my middle name. And Fortune was my grandmother's mother's maiden name.
Got it.
And so when I was born, my mom was so excited to have a girl. She'd wanted a girl forever. And my grandmother kept pushing her. She's like, I really want you to name her Fortune. I think that should be her name. And my mom was like, she would have to be Miss America to live up to a name like that. And I came close with my homecoming. but she really loved the name Emily. And it's so quintessential of my mom to pick that name, because Emily sort of like that. If you think of a girl back then, like Emily is that name. Mm-hmm. And my mom's a girly girl. She had dresses, like my whole closet was like full of dresses. She just wanted me to be the girliest girl in the world. And she got this, you know? I'm like running around in umbros all the time.
Turning double plays.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't want this stupid dress on. Ugh. And I would never felt like an Emily. Like, it never fit my personality. It never fit my vibe. But that was my name. And that's what I went by for a long time. So my grandmother, like I said, was a big influence on me. And my senior year of high school, we were told she had cancer. And it was like, it was devastating. They were like, told us she basically had a year to live. And I remember I had a tennis tournament that was starting that night. My mom came home and she was like, we just found out your grandmother has a year to live. You might want to go say something to her. And then, I mean, you're like, I'm like 17 trying to be like, wait, what? Like,
that's how he told
yeah.
you.
Yeah. And you're just trying to like process, like, so I went outside and I couldn't say anything. So we just, my grandmother and I just stared at each other for like 30 minutes. And you're like, holy, this is crazy. But you just kind of hope that like a year will turn into 5 years and whatnot. So I graduated high school, and she had her checkup, and they go, she's got 2 weeks to a month.
No way.
And you go, what? Like, no, this can't be happening.
But as you're hanging out with her and spending time with her, do you see her getting sicker? And
yeah.
You do. Was she going through chemo and everything, too?
Unfortunately, she was too old. She was 89. She was 88 when she got it. And they just like, they said we can give her chemo, but this is a really aggressive. It was basically a skin cancer, and I mean, she's 88. It's not like skin cancer, like she's out in the sun, but it just a spot that developed that went internally.
Man.
It started going internally, so it was wrapping around her brain or spinal cord. We didn't know this at the time, and they basically were like, we could give her chemo, but that would mean like she would have her last year of her life would be awful. And or, you know, and we don't know that it's worth it for her to go through that. So she opted out of that. And you're kind of, it sucks, but you're like waiting to die.
Yeah.
And so it was just a year of like spending a lot of time with her. So I had this like hanging over my head my senior year of high school. But
can I ask you about that time? Mm-hmm. Like, did you talk about death with your grandma?
Not during the year. I just remember trying to be more present. Like, I would take her to go eat, you know, and just try to, it was more about time together than it was about like facing it head on. Cause when you're 17, you don't really know emotions. You don't understand how to have a direct conversation like that. So I didn't really talk about death with her when she was conscious. I had a couple of times where, well, so long story short, she was getting sicker and sicker. And that summer was like, okay, we have 2 weeks to a month. We don't know how long she's got. She was becoming frail. And she was going in and out. Like, sometimes she was super alert. Sometimes she was, like, unconscious. And we got a hospice nurse because we kept her at home in a hospital bed at home. And the hospice nurse was very spiritual. And she would say, I think she's waiting on some sort of permission to die. And so we would think, oh, it must be my brother who's in the Coast Guard. He's got to come home and say goodbye. So she'd be unconscious. He'd come home. And we would have to say goodbye. We would have to tell her it's okay to die, which is when you're 17 and that's like you're like a parent and the closest person to you. It's like I'm like sobbing, just like, I don't want her to die though. Yeah. But you're having to tell her, I'm going to be okay. You're like, I hope I'm going to be okay. But it's not about you anymore. It's about them. And so that was really hard. I had to do that twice. It was probably the hardest thing I've ever done. And then she would just like pop back up like on Monday, be like, what's up, guys?
And you're
like,
nah.
Yeah. I'm like, what are you doing?
So did she hear everything you guys were
saying? I don't know. We never talked about it.
Nah, she pop up.
So here's the crazy.
Wait, is that why you had to do this twice?
So that's why I had to do it twice.
At first, I was like, okay, I got to remember to ask her about the other person.
But I know.
No way.
She's on morphine. It's just on morphine. So, you hear stories about them seeing someone's coming for them. I was trying to find that stuff out. I'd be like, anybody? Is anybody coming to say something? And she would say things, but you weren't really sure what was the medicine and whatnot. So the trippiest part of the story is when she was told she had 2 weeks to a month, that was May. And I was going to college August 13th. So she said to my mom that she was going to see me off to college. And my mom was like, well, that's impossible. That's, 3 months away. And she just kept hanging on that summer. And like I said, totally good, totally not good. Like, I quit my job that summer. I'd been working since I was 14. And I just spent my whole summer with her, focused on her. We had some really beautiful moments. My dad, she got really frail. My dad would carry her around to see, like, the things in her house she couldn't walk and see anymore. And her best friends would come, and they would have these beautiful moments together.
I didn't even think of stuff. Like,
yeah,
you can't get up and walk around your own home anymore. I haven't seen upstairs.
Yeah.
So
my dad carried her like a baby around seeing the things, and things just have more meaning when you know someone's going. And so we had my chorus teacher came and like sing her hymns and stuff. It's like really beautiful things. And it was hard.
It's okay. It's totally okay.
So the summer came and so it was August 12th and she was still there, but she was unconscious at this point. And I haven't talked about this in so long. I don't think I've ever talked about it on a podcast. But she was unconscious again, and I was going to college, and I woke up that morning and I went to say goodbye, and I knew I would never see her again. And I went to college, moved in. And the next morning at 10 a.m., because I had such a connection with her, I felt her leave. And I called my dad at her house, I called her house. My dad answered, and he was like, I got to call you back because she literally just passed. They watched her pass. And so, she held on for 3 months to see me achieve this, goal to go to college, because she was always very invested in me and my whatever path that was. And and we had a cancer doctor later tell us that they studied her case. They said this cancer was so aggressive and so painful.
Oh,
he's like, she should not have lived past 2 weeks. He was like, the amount of suffering that she would have had is beyond it. And my grandmother never said, ouch. She never complained. She lived for 3 months in agony to see me off to college. And it changed me.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Forever.
Yeah, it should.
It changed me forever because I was like, I can't be a piece of shit.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you can't let her go and waste and in vain.
Yeah,
no.
So it put me on a path of like, I'll do whatever I can to make her proud, you know? So that's when I circled my fortune.
And that's when.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, I just got chills hardcore.
Yeah.
So oh, that's awesome.
I circled my fortune when I was 22 or 23. Sorry.
And that's your mom's mom. How'd your mom feel about that?
I think that we thought, because that was when I was starting to get interested in comedy. I thought I would just have it as my quote unquote stage name, that I would be Fortune for comedy and Emily in life, but it just doesn't work like that. I quickly became Fortune, and it was clear that that was my name. And I went by that because I thought, well, anything that I accomplish is because I have that person believing in me from day one. And so I wouldn't have the confidence to do any sort of performance without her. So it's important. That name is important to me because anytime anyone recognizes that name, it's like a nod to her.
I totally understand it. I feel the same way. Like my father died when I was 16 and then my grandmother died. His mom, we lived with after that when I was like 20. And I gave her mouth-to-mouth CPR.
Wow.
Like, it was ugly. Both these deaths were ugly. We found him dead in his bed.
Man.
And I just, as I got into therapy and got over just getting angry about every goddamn thing because everything's been taken from me. And I started to look at them and I was like, man, these are two people that literally gave their life for us. And I'll be damned if I'm going to fucking waste that.
Right.
So I'm getting emotional too. I know where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. This show keeps them alive.
Yeah.
I'm telling my daughter about them all the time. There's pictures all over the house. Like they were real people that I don't want you just to think they were this story I tell.
Right.
These were real fucking people that mattered. And by the way, you're not here if you know what I mean? Like this is two generations for you.
Yeah. So, they're the foundations for us.
They are. And again, the shit they've seen, and we lived to be 88 years old. It was 88, you said?
She was 88? 89 when she died.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she had a birthday during that too?
Yeah, during that year.
Damn, she wasn't even supposed to go longer than 2 weeks.
I know, yeah. And so,
I mean, that's strength. That's real strength.
That's the type of strength that not many people have. I don't know that I would have
strength.
But yeah, you just think, man, this person like really laid it down so I could like keep, you know. I mean, because there's so many things in my life that she has missed. I mean, it blows my mind when I think that she's been dead for longer in my life than
she was alive.
Oh, like that, when I hit that mark, I was like, dang, that sucks. There was so much that she missed. But, you know, just like that was the one big, like, significant thing that she could, like, usher me into was very symbolic. For me and for her, I think, you know. So, yeah, I mean, her influence is still a big part of me and my journey. And listen, do I always get it right? No. I mean, we all, like, make mistakes. We all, like, can be dicks.
Yeah.
I try to do the best I can. It's like her best friend used to say, the best is you can is all you can do when you can't do any better. And so I'm not a perfect person.
I like that.
But I, I try to do the best I can to be a good person, to be kind to people. I'm learning, I'm growing, and I just try to make her proud, you know, and try to not be an asshole because that would bum her out. So,
how stoked would she be to come see you perform? I know, right? Doesn't it kill you that the people that mattered and put it down, gave their lives for us, will never get to see it?
Never. Because I had not discovered performing by that point. You know, I did not do any theater till college. And so she never saw that side of me, never, you know, but she was
there.
Was
she a funny lady? Where's your sense of humor come from? Mom, dad?
She was not funny. No. I'm like, no, she was not funny. That bitch was not funny. she was a very buttoned up woman. She was your a very typical Southern lady,
prim and proper.
So she was like all about manners. She was kind, like I said, but my mom said she softened when she had grandkids. She was a little bit more stoic when they were growing up, and not as like she was never cold, but not warm like she
hard.
Became.
I mean, look, that lady lit. Think about that. Like, I hear you, not cold, but she was tough and
hard.
Well,
she lived through, you know, World War II.
Great Depression? No, maybe not.
It was
88, and she died in when? No.
She died
World
in 98.
'98.
It was
so
she
1910?
Was, yeah, she was born like 1907 or something
like
that. She was giving out ration books and stuff for during the war, and I mean, she lived a long life and went through some stuff, and so she, you know, and she saw many different. She grew up really poor, then had a very extravagant life, and then died very poor. But she was a good woman, and she left her mark. And you know, all of the people in my hometown showed up for her because she made such a difference. She her kindness went a long way. But she was a very buttoned up woman. If she said the word "damn," I would like laugh.
Oh,
and
really?
She would be like, "Do you think that's funny?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And so I loved seeing her crack or whatever the term was. So I think that's why I get a kick out of when there's some of my audience with their arms, you know, like that, like a dude will come to my show sometimes and have his arms crossed, and I'm like, I'm gonna get you. And then you seeing them kind of that melt away, I take pride in that. So I used to like kind of like to try to make her ladylike disappear when I could.
What would you say resonates with you most today about your grandmom and what she taught you about life, and what do you carry with you most?
Probably the kindness. I saw her just be kind to everyone. It didn't matter who they were, what their background was. Like, she just was a very open, kind person, always helping people in need and doing. And she did a lot of little things that meant a lot to people. That she just took the time to constantly think about people. She was very generous. She was a little too generous. That was also part of her money thing. She got taken advantage of. So I try to be generous but smart. I try to not have the business sense that my family had and be better about that kind of stuff. But the kindness is something I definitely try to emulate with her, of just being nice to people, no matter who they are, which seems like people think it's so unique out here. They're like, oh, nobody does that. I'm like, well, that where I'm from, that's, you hold the door for people. You say please and thank you. You know, you look people in the eye, that kind of stuff.
So then back to my question, do you feel like you get your sense of humor from someone in your family?
I mean, I have my family, my immediate family's pretty funny.
Are they?
Yeah. We always used humor as a way to get through the hard times. I remember at my grandmother's funeral that day, we were all laughing. And we, because my family, we don't shy away from the dark humor, the leaning into the moment of whatever tragedy's going on and making a joke about it. We always found a way, when the lights were getting cut off, to like make a joke. And we always leaned on that to get us through those hard times. So I appreciate that. From my family, I definitely got that from just the vibe that we had as a group. And individually, everyone's, you know, has a good personality. They tell stories. And so I think the storyteller in me comes from being in that environment. But so there's not one person. My mom's very, has a great personality. She's on my podcast a lot. And people love her. Like, they're always like, when's Ginger coming back on?
I love it.
She's not shy. So I definitely have, like, a very personable family.
Did your dad come see you perform?
Yeah, when I'm back home. Like, he doesn't like to travel. Yeah. So I have to be, like, in Charlotte. But when I'm in Charlotte, he definitely comes. And he gets a kick out of
it. I'll
bet. Now he's in Myrtle Beach.
Oh, he's in South Carolina.
And so now he keeps going, when are you coming to Myrtle Beach? And he's always like, I know, I'll get you, like, I need help getting a venue. Yeah. I'm like, well,
my
Dad,
buddy's got a bar.
I'm like, Dad, I do have an agent. I mean, I'm not new to this. Because he's always like, I know somebody that somebody can get you some stage time over here. I'm like, well, thanks, Dad. But I haven't booked a show yet in Myrtle Beach, but he's dying for me
he's
to come out
on
there.
It,
yeah. Because they're proud. My family's very proud.
They
like
be.
To, you know, be like, look at what my daughter's doing. Yeah, that's really sweet.
Yeah, it is. How about your brothers?
My oldest brother lives in Rock Hill, South Carolina. He works at Winthrop University in their student services. My middle brother lives, he's in the Coast Guard, but they also own a fishing business.
He's still in the Coast Guard.
Yeah, he's still in the Coast Guard.
Did you say when you're...
I think he might be a civilian, though, but wow. He's in the reserves, but okay. He works for the Coast Guard as a civilian. But, yeah, he's been in there. He joined when he was, like, 19.
Wow.
He lives out on the East Coast of North Carolina, out, like, near Wilmington. And they own a fishing company where they go to turn, like, you know, fishing's so huge. And they go to all the big tournaments on the East Coast, and they have a company, the Southern King Association, where they throw fishing tournaments, and they live stream a bunch of fishing tournaments.
Hell yeah.
So
I'm
they're
go
all
to
up
one.
In that. You should.
Would love to.
They're all up in that world.
Okay.
So yeah.
So I know we got to get you out of here, and I want to be cognizant of your time and schedule. So let me ask you. Of course, I want to ask. I mentioned to you before. Now that what we've talked about.
Yeah.
Going
you
back.
You like turned into Oprah in here, making me cry. Jesus, Ryan. I've never done this on a podcast. I feel like a little bitch. I'm like, what is happening right now?
I love it. I mean, I like seeing people just get caught off guard by
yeah.
it, you know? And also, you know, when you sit, sometimes, even in therapy, like for mm-hmm. me, I'm used to the story. Mm-hmm. So there's times where I'm saying it. And
yeah.
there's other times where just something else catches
yeah.
me
and most times in life I just talk about it and not have any sort of I talk about it like
right.
oh this
right.
thing happened and then yeah other times it hits
but when
a nerve.
You sit and really think about what those people did for you and
yeah.
the sacrifices they literally made it just fucking
yeah.
oh it wrecks me
it's
I'm just
a
like,
sacrifice
it's
I think
sacrifice.
It's the emotion part yeah,
and what you're
sure.
doing is you know this is my whole mantra now is gratitude so
yeah.
I love seeing how grateful you are for these people in your
oh,
life
yeah.
And,
yeah I mean I have nothing but gratitude and that any, you know, I've been out here in LA for 18 years now. I've been in comedy for 15, and you know, I'm finally getting some traction. And it's like with every step is like, thank you,
yes.
like holy shit,
That's
thank
right.
you, yeah.
So let me ask you then, what would Fortune tell 16-year-old Emily? What advice would you give her?
Oh man,
today?
It's funny because that. 16-year-old Emily seems like a whole other person, right? It just seems like it almost is like looking at someone else. I think I would say, you know, that it will get better. There's so much that you're going to get to explore that you're, you know, haven't gotten to do yet. And you're going to figure out who you are, and it's going to, everything's going to fall into place. And so you just got to get through this time of being a kid and going through these hard times. And then eventually you're going to be able to take care of yourself and everybody else. And you're not going to have to be nervous that it's all going to go away, or that, you know, that I think that was the thing as a 16-year-old, just having it in other people's hands, life was unsettling. And getting to grow up and sort of take care of yourself and be okay is like the biggest thing that you hope for. And so I think I would just say, just hang in there, and it's coming. That stability and that peace is coming.
I love it. That's fantastic. Yeah. Please promote everything again. Tour, social, all that stuff.
Yeah. Big tour all over the U.S. If there's a big city, I'm coming in that city or near that city over the next year. I've got like 65 cities coming.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
A lot of theaters, clubs this summer. FortuneFeemster.com for that information. I'm on Instagram, FortuneFeemster, and Twitter I'm on, but like I don't go on as much because I don't like all the Twitter fighting.
Yeah, it's a dumpster fire. It is.
I like to post the fun pictures and videos of Brenda or me dancing with ice cream or whatever.
That's right.
My stuff, I just like to put out the happier fun stuff. And I would love for people to check out a show. I do a lot of storytelling. I talk about my life. I talk about my journey. And try to make it funny in the process.
Well, I love it.
Check out my hour special on Netflix, Sweet
Absolutely.
And Salty.
Yes. And then go see Fortune live coming to a city near you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ryan.
As always, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all social media. We'll talk to y'all next week.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Lowe's knows how to help you save this 4th of July. Upgrade your laundry routine with the new and exclusive first-of-its-kind all-in-one vented laundry combo. Wash and dry in just 68 minutes. Save up to 40% on select major appliances. Plus, when you buy more, you save more. Shop Samsung this July 4th at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.